This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here for Sunday morning wake-up call. And special thanks to Harrisburg's 95.1 for tuning in. And support also coming from your Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield authorized agent, Herb Bennett. As your local agent in Central Virginia, Herb provides expert knowledge and personal service in designing your individual health insurance plan. Your health is worth protecting, and you should not let it go uninsured. For a quote, you can give Agent Herb Bennett a call. It's 885-425-0090, or you can just go online and visit agentherb.com. All right, thanks for tuning in with us today. Our guest, guest Wayne Cozart, unavailable for right now. We'll see if he's able to make it in the next few minutes. But, as always, my in-law, as he recently identified himself, Sean McCord. Sean, how goes it?
I'm fine, Rick. I think I said I was the unwelcome in-law who you couldn't get to move out of the guest room.
Right, but who's here at needy times? Because Sean, always up and coming, well-versed in the local issues of the day. So we're going to talk about that. Phone lines will be open. Sean and I are going to throw out some general topics, talk about what little bit we probably know about them, or in my case, incorrect information that I have on them, and let Sean correct me and let you call in with everything that's going on out there, your opinions. We'll talk about certainly the weather has been the issue of the day, and love to hear how a few of you dealt with no power or be the welcomer to others and friends and family with no power. The recent news is that they've pulled the benches off of the downtown mall in the city of Charlottesville. Certainly that has created a little tension among both sides. Sean, working for the university, chat a little bit about what's going on there now that the tumult is over, or is it still ongoing and I'm just unaware of it. So we'll be doing that throughout the hour. Again, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. Would love to hear from you on any of the topics at hand. Take advantage of the hour. Talk about what matters to you. All right, Sean.
Sure.
An employee of the University of Virginia.
Yes, sir. I work for the University Library.
University Library. And you got your librarian glasses on, I can see. We should have some online photos taken of this. Sean McCord, the hot librarian.
That's because I'm talking and rapidly updating the weather report at the same time.
Is that what it is? Certainly the last 3 weeks of June, lots going on. You can see a lot of I see Rusty taking a photo of Sean McCord, the hot librarian. Is that going to go on your Facebook page? You can see a lot of the grounds, or certainly key parts of the grounds from your window, correct? I think I've seen photos of that before.
Oh, well, actually, since you brought it up, yes. Actually, I have a very nice office. I've worked at the university for over 20 years. And it took me this long, but I do have a job now where I actually have an office, not a cubicle, and I have a desk and windows, and I actually can overlook the university right outside the library.
So, but you could see a lot of the activity.
Absolutely.
That was going on in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Have things calmed down?
I mean,
for many people, it's like been washed away. Overdone with, stored, let's move on. Is that the case on grounds, actually?
No, we're still talking about it. I think it's a general atmosphere of optimism and anticipation. Optimism because, the president was reinstated. A feeling that, hey, you know what? We can actually get together and we can affect change. I've never seen anything like that in my 20 years at the university. The rallies on the lawn, the meetings of the faculty senate, it was the conversation that everybody had, not just on grounds and at work, but I'd be, on the weekend, I'd run into people at Bodo's and someone that I knew from UVA, and we just kind of look at each other and say, yep, we know what's on our mind right now. So I think the past few weeks with the attempted ouster of the president and then the protests and the strong feeling of unity that came out of staff and faculty and even students that were there, not just students that were there for the summer, but students that came back, you know, sort of came out of their burrows and came back to their university for that period. The unified front that came out, there's a real sense that we can do something with this. We can affect change. You know, the Board of Visitors, you know, a month ago, I couldn't have told you a thing about the Board of Visitors. I couldn't have told you who was on the Board of Visitors. And the Board of Visitors have met in my building. I've been there present at their meetings. I didn't know a thing about them. The only thing I knew about them was that they selected the president a couple of years ago. And then we learned, guess what? They can also fire the president. So there's a real sense that that we should be involved. We should continue to stay involved. You know, Charlottesville is still in Virginia, and it's kind of sleepy. And we tend to go about our day-to-day and feel good about it and feel that we're doing something important. Realizing when this became a national conversation, when we saw, you know, cable news networks and TV shows and radio shows and newspaper articles and the Chronicle of Higher Education and the Washington Post and the New York Times talk about what was going on at UVA, it sort of broadened our horizons, I think, and made us realize that we're very much a part of an important ongoing national conversation about privatization and the role of public institutes and who should be running those things.
But is the conversation still going on? I mean, for many people, I think if you follow the articles, if you were deep into the topic, you may notice that I believe that there are several articles in The Hook again this week,
mm-hmm.
Sort of follow-ups. I was out of town, and I read the daily newspaper where I was, happened to be the Virginian Pilot, the Norfolk Virginia Beach paper.
Which, by the way, it was one of the papers that was doing some really good stories.
The Cavalier Daily, again, there's sort of the follow-up where now they're talking about the emails that were written during the process,
mm-hmm.
rather than beforehand, and sort of the emails that set up the firing. Now some of the Freedom of Information Act articles are about the emails that were exchanged between Board of Visitors members during so. But for, I don't know, and I'm just going to pick a number, 85% of the population that was truly interested, has this been set aside? Do you see the numbers of people? Are you high-fiving as you walk back and forth to work about the effort that was displayed and the decision that was granted?
I'm going to punt on that a little bit and say that the answer is yes and no. I'm going to say that, yes, there's definitely a feeling that we accomplished something, relief. There's that kind of post-relief. Okay, can we just take a breather now? But I also sense strongly that there's a feeling that, you know what, we made this happen. We, the people who came together, made this happen. And we should continue to stay alert. We should continue to stay attentive to these issues about privatization and about what it means to have an education and about online learning. And you know, the ironic thing is that it's kind of a sidebar to your question, Rick, but these discussions about online learning and what we can offer to the world outside of the traditional classroom has been a conversation that was already going on at the university. And I think now everybody is really tuned into it. But I think because that after 2 weeks of just sustained effort, people want to step back now. They want to take a breath. Certainly with the heat wave that we've been having, is just, you know, a sort of general malaise is set. And I know we'll get to that in a second. But I really feel just talking to people that that there is a new direction that has been given to everybody who's associated with the university, that there's been a new path laid out for us, that we're not just going to come in and do our jobs every day, but that there's been a clear path of engagement that may not have been there before. And my sense is that people want to continue going down that path.
Call us up if you want to jump in on this. You know, are you still interested in the conversation about what happened in June between President Teresa Sullivan of UVA and the university's Board of Visitors? Is this still a topic that's near the top of your list of your concern or another topic that you want us to talk about today. Again, it is our hour of a sort of free speech, free topics, your chance to dial up and bring up your bit of the conversation, 979-0919. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Our planned topic and guest unavailable for today. We'll put that forth sometime in the future because I'm really interested in having Wayne Cozart on and talking about some of the secret societies of UVA, the Mystic Order of Eli Banana, and the Raven Society and some of the others. Some of the olders, some of the newers, some we've never heard of. But we'll save that because Sean and I are talking about current events. Call us up with your current event that you'd like us to discuss. Again, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. This is WNRN Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm Rick Moore, Sean McCord here with me today. Sean, just a few more minutes on the university's issue.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about people taking a deep breath, but who oversees the fact that the next step does get taken? You talk about taking a breath so that people can look around, sort of gather their thoughts, plan out what to do next. But in so many incidents, you meet your goal and then you're distracted by something else.
Sure.
And I think many people would say, no, that's not going to happen. But who's standing over there saying, no, this will happen?
Well, I think you look to the organizations that came forward during this whole kerfuffle, especially the Faculty Senate. With Faculty Senate, which, you know, another group that I had heard of, but I hadn't paid much attention to until I went to their meeting in the middle of all this. There are something like 83 members of the Faculty Senate. And when we went to the big meeting up at the Darden School, their quorum was something like 50, something which they had no trouble achieving.
You attended that?
I did, just as an interested staff member. There's a number of groups, and I, you know, without a list in front of me, I can't name them all. But a number of groups that came forward, you know, faculty groups, staff groups, student groups, and took a stand on this. And I think people are going to continue looking at those groups for leadership in these conversations. Now, the fact that the governor reappointed Helen Dragas to the Board of Visitors, and then the members that he appointed, the other members that he appointed, seem mostly to be drawn from the same pool of people who have, you know, contributed mightily to governor's election campaign and other political causes. People with backgrounds in business and finance and real estate. I think there was a former president of,
JMU, I believe.
I think you may be right in that. And two senior advisors to the Board of Visitors, one of them being Leonard Sandridge. Oh, yes, and one of the new appointees was Ed Miller, who was one of the names that Helen Dragas is apparently floating as an interim president.
As a new president, yes.
So now he's on the Board of Visitors. So, yeah, there is a sense of, you know, everything has changed and yet nothing has changed. You know, I have friends at work who were gone for a couple of weeks. You know, they came back and like, what happened?
Right.
You know, they read about it in the news and they came back, but they look around and it's the Board of Visitors is more or less the same. The president is back in office. You know, there aren't any, it's
right. There's just some dead grass on the lawn in front of the rotunda.
Right. Exactly. And some scrubbed off graffiti. But even those people get the sense just from talking to other people, because it's possible to be away. I knew people who were literally at sea. They were at semester at sea for those 2 weeks and they came back. But you know, they kept online and they kept apprised of the news. And we're, by the way, really, really sorry that they weren't here, because there was definitely a sense that history was being made here. so who's gonna lead it? Well, I think we're gonna turn to the groups, but I think that the people who work there every day, the people come into work, staff and the faculty, and hopefully when the students return, especially I think when the students return, the conversation is going to pick up again about how do we stay more involved. Who is the Board of Visitors? There's a group now started by Joan Fenton that wants to revise the Board of Visitors, working with the General Assembly, constitutionally revise the Board of Visitors to change it so that there should be a faculty member on board. That their meetings should always be open and recorded, and the minutes should be posted soon after.
Well, that's two key things there. Mm-hmm. Let me jump in here. When the students come back, well, you've lost 25% of your followers. At least, so your fourth years have moved on.
Sure.
And the first years have no idea what in the world just happened.
Probably.
And now, the alums were a key part of everything that happened.
Absolutely.
So you don't actually lose them, but they're not going to be on grounds every day going to class.
Right.
And is there a way to see that those state delegates who said, we need to change how this is done, to follow up so that they continue their work when January comes around and new bills are put forth, to make sure that those bills are put forth in the way that behoove everyone of their interest in the Board of Visitors? You're talking about what Joan Fenton would like. Mm-hmm. And certainly, I believe, Delegate Toscano and Delegate Landis, on opposite sides of the political spectrum, have both said, this can't work this way. Not necessarily the makeup of the board, I don't believe that they agreed on, but they both said, you can't have three people fire someone who's 16 people hired.
Right.
Is there a way to, that you're aware of, that participants can or are expected to follow through so that these conversations continue in January at the state legislative level?
I think that knowledge is still emerging. In the midst of all this, I asked a few people, where is the charter that created and sustains the Board of Visitors? We learned that the governor appoints and the General Assembly affirms the members. But is it the entire General Assembly? Is it a subcommittee? Does the subcommittee vote on it and then send it to the larger assembly? And what are the rules that govern it? We know that the rules were made in Thomas Jefferson's time. In fact, I heard, was talking to a history professor, and he said that when Thomas Jefferson started the University of Virginia and he started the Board of Visitors, the original Board of Visitors were friends of his, people like James Monroe and Madison and Adams. And that even when James Madison was president, Thomas Jefferson sent him a letter and said, look, I know you're president of the United States, but you're ignoring responsibilities on the Board of Visitors. You really need to come back down here and start attending some of the meetings. So, has the charter that created and sustains the Board of Visitors been changed since Jefferson's time? Maybe. I don't know, and I don't know who knows. So part of the conversation is going to be looking at it, saying who decides these things.
But that's part of my concern. Again, 11:19 here in the wake up call. Sean McCord and I talking about current events, currently sort of the follow up to everything that happened with the BOV at UVA and President Teresa Sullivan. We'll be getting into a couple other topics quite shortly. Call us up if you have a comment on this one or want us to jump into another topic. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. For many people, you're talking about what are the rules. For many, it seems as though this minutia is nothing more than clicking the I accept at the end of the long stream of information that you need to sign to, so you can take another step further and downloading the software or ordering something, you know, whatever it is. And my fear is that as this becomes a front page article to a second page article to something in the historical section, that we get caught up in our next issue. When Hawes Spencer was here a couple weeks ago talking about this, the George Hughley case was the main issue. That was a national topic back in February. Something not to the level of what happened at UVA came forth in a legality in his case, and it was barely noticed by folks because there was something new taking up the large font.
I see where you're going with this, Rick, but I can't draw the same parallels. I mean, there's always going to be a sensational story that knocks last week's sensational story off the front pages, And that's what all the, you know, media is talking about, and maybe people are talking about too. But this cut really close to home for several reasons, especially for people who work at or involved with the university. For one thing, it has to do with employment. In these uncertain economic times, as we see companies failing and private corporations cutting back, my own wife lost her job last year, and I was able to look at my time at the university and the commitment I made to the university and think, you know, I've put in 20 years there, and maybe I'm not making as much money as I might have out in private corporation, but I've had the job security. And that's one of the trade-offs that a lot of people who work for the university willingly give into. And when the president of the university can be fired, and yes, okay, technically she resigned, but she resigned because she was told she was about to be fired. And the president of the university can be let go, and there's no scandal. There was no muttering of this. There was no movement. It just came out of the blue. And it makes suddenly everybody feel very insecure. You know, when you can say, hey, you know, at least I still, you know, maybe I'm not making as much money as I used to, or maybe I had to pay more for my medical benefits, but at least I still got a job. And when the president can be fired, that really shook people up. And the other thing is that the way it happened, you know, pardon me for using some of this loaded language, but a cadre of people coming in. Yes, appointed by the governor, but they're visitors to the university. It's called the Board of Visitors. It's not called the Board of Involved People or the Board of Alumni or even Board of Rectors. It is people who, by their very name and nature, are coming in from outside the university to give advice on how to run things. It touches on kind of a deep conversation that has been going on in a micro level, but also on a macro level in this country about who's in a better place to run our public institutions. Is it people who have made lots of money and sort of live in that kind of rarefied world of large houses and mansions and assistants, people like the current Republican or about to be Republican candidate for president, or people who have, you know, who have worked in the trenches, who have had to, you know, drive used cars most of their lives and taking their college education and kind of work their way up to become head of these public institutions. Who's better to run these things? And I think that's a conversation the entire country is going to be having between now and November.
We got a caller. See if you stuck with me. Caller, are you with me?
People that were trouncing around campus screaming for more pay for all the people, all the little people. Maybe the university couldn't afford that. Maybe she's just too far left. Sometimes that happens in the university community. Maybe she needed to be fired. Maybe she should be gone. I'm just giving you the other side. Investigate that. Don't just look at the left side. Come on, guys. Open your eyes and try to be centrist.
And that's always my goal, but I don't always have it because I'm not a big part of, while I'm an alum, and I follow the university from the newspaper or online, I don't get to walk the grounds like Mr. McCord does every Sunday. But thanks. I think that's an important part. And, you know, I got busted on that 2 weeks ago with a caller who said, you know what? I think his comment was, it's just a school. And I think what I needed to be reminded of at the time, while I disagreed with him, was that for many people, it is just a school and not to be so such in the center of our lives.
To be so provincial?
Yeah, provincial. Thank you. Let me write that down. An important word choice. All right, 11:25 here on the Wake Up Call. Sean McCord and I talking about current events, starting with a little follow-up to what's happened the last couple weeks after our June, what did you call it, kerfuffle?
Yes, the recent unpleasantness.
Mark, the Tigerfuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. A heat advisory, partly cloudy with afternoon showers and thunderstorms, some of them severe today. Highs in the upper 90s, a heat index of 109. Mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms tonight. Lows in the low 70s. And then tomorrow, again, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's pretty hot out there, folks. 94 in the Valley, 94 in Lynchburg, 94 in Richmond, 99 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Market for Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's program is supported by Dixon Disposal. When Dixon picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or call them 434-978-2111. 11:26 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our scheduled guest and topic, Wayne Cozart, talking about the secret society, is unable to be here with us today. So Sean and I are talking current events in the area. Our caller reminding us to be a little more centrist. Maybe the president did deserve to be fired. And as I've said several times, it wasn't necessarily what happened, because I didn't know enough about the topic. It was the way it happened. And that's what got me worked up. If we had been shared a little more information, if things had not been so opaque, maybe there wouldn't have been such a heavy-leaning crowd to one side of the kerfuffle.
Absolutely. You know, I don't have, actually, let me rephrase that. I did not have at the beginning of this a very learned opinion on President Sullivan as an administrator. I work in an area where I'm a few levels removed from high-level administration and from faculty. So now I had met her several times. I had seen her walking around the university. She seemed like a friendly person. I ran into her in the CVS. She stood in line in front of me. So she was a very affable sort of president of the people, and I appreciated that about her. So personally, I liked her. I didn't really know anything about her as an administrator. And when I got that email that fateful Sunday, whatever it was, June 10th,
yep.
I was shocked and I was surprised and I wondered what went on. But I kind of assumed there must have been a reason. But as the conversation went on, as people looked into it, as local media looked into it, as people, as individuals looked into it, as the conversation kept growing, the wall that we kept running up against was there was no reason.
It was at least not being shared. Apparently we were, whether you want to say, I mean, there are all kinds of reasons. Were we too dumb? Were we unworthy? Where it was a personnel matter. But we were never given a real reason as to why. And as we found out afterwards with this Freedom of Information Act email exchange, we found out that it wasn't really a personnel matter that was okay to keep from someone. I don't want someone talking about explaining my good or bad reasons for the job with the general public.
Sure.
But we found out that that wasn't the case, and the true reasons for the case continued to be kept.
And still haven't been fully discussed. So we've had some hint of that that the Board of Visitors, or let me be more exact, a few members of the Board of Visitors and some people outside of the Board of Visitors who were acting as consultants felt like that Teresa Sullivan wasn't moving fast enough to do exactly what? To make us put it more on the technological edge, like MIT and Stanford, and offer online learning. That still seems like a really strange reason, especially since UVA has been on the cutting edge in some related areas of digital education. And so the real reasons are still unclear. All we know is that everybody got back into a room, and obviously, I mean, that big meeting where she was reinstated, there was obviously a lot of background conversation that we weren't privy to, may never yet be privy to, that went on when everybody came in the room and they voted unanimously to reinstate her.
Well, the caller had a point. The goal is to be centrist as possible for the majority of the public.
Mm-hmm.
I think many people want to believe that they are centrist and start in the middle before choosing sides on a topic. But when you're not given a lot of information, that makes it difficult. 11:31 on the wake up call, talking about finishing up our conversation on UVA's sort of recent information after the President Sullivan kerfuffle. I'm stuck on that word now, Sean. Sean and I talking about just news in the air, current mm-hmm. events. Call up if you want to scathe me for not being centrist enough, if you want to toss out another topic out here for us. I think I'm going to jump to the heat in just a moment and would like to hear from a person or two about their stories from the recent storm. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, Sean.
Sure.
You live in the city.
I do.
Were you one of the people, we're talking today about how hot everything was.
Is.
Were you one of the people who lost power or kept power?
Essentially did not lose power. Lights flickered that Friday night.
Hang on, caller.
At the derecho?
I don't know.
Came in. Like an hour and a half the next morning. But we were very, very lucky. I live in the JPA neighborhood, and I know the city was more or less spared, although there was a house just half a mile from mine. You may have seen it. Many of you have seen it driving up and down Shamrock Road.
Oh, right? There was a picture of that, I think, in the Hook or somewhere with that gigantic tree right across
just,
the
just
house.
Just slice the end of the house off, yeah. And it's still there. Like I said, just half a mile from my house. We ran outside and I got word, not from the weather reports, not from news flashes, but on Twitter from friends of mine who live in the Stony Point Keswick area who just sent out a tweet. You know, if you live in the city, you better go outside and grab anything loose in your yard because there's a massive storm coming. That's the first I heard of it. I had about 5 minutes warning, went on the porch and grabbed all the sort of loose furniture and houseplants and brought them inside, and still was not prepared for what hit us. I was relatively lucky. And Rick, I understand you did the wise thing and just left town for a week.
That was already planned. Caller. If you were, call back. Participate if you'd like. Please don't expect me to immediately cut myself or Sean off or any guest to take the call, and because we don't have a producer on hand answering the phones immediately, it may take us a sec, but we ask you to participate. If you want to jump back to the University of Virginia incident, you're welcome to do that. I'd love to hear from a person or two with their stories about the recent storm and the heat how long you went without power and the issues that go all around with that, or did you stay with neighbors, or did you have power and invited family and friends in? It's certainly been a large conversation here since we moved on from the UVA headlines. The headlines now happen to be about the weather. 979-0919-1877-WNRN Rocks is toll free. I know that the weather has been a major part of Central Virginia. This is Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN.
I just want to make a quick plug, just to go back for just a moment to the UVA discussion. I want to make a quick plug for my employer, the University Library, and specifically the Special Collections Library, the building where I work. They have made an effort to collect materials related to the kerfuffle. I think there's actually still a discussion about what they're going to call it there, because originally, when they started collecting materials, they were calling it the ouster of President Sullivan. Now it's the ouster and reinstatement of President Sullivan.
That's a lot of words.
It is. History will decide what eventually to call this. But the Special Collections Library is trying to collect materials related to this entire discussion, because they feel like this is something that historians are going to want to study in the not too distant future. So they're collecting a material collection, you know, from signs that people held to flyers that were handed out to. I understand that someone's put in a request to Gwyneth West to get her purple umbrella that she used when she guided the president through the lawn on that memorable day. But they're also trying to collect, because a lot of the discussion went on online, so they're trying to collect tweets and not just articles that appeared online, but also comments You know, how do you capture comments? Did you just at a certain point, okay, say 24 hours after the article appeared online, we're going to collect all of those comments and then archive them, especially when, and these are really interesting discussions, especially when sometimes if they're moderated websites such as, I won't get into examples, but there are some sites where if you post something that's inappropriate, moderator will go back and remove it, and you'll see that, you know, removed by moderator sign. Well, should historians, for historical purposes, should those kind of comments be captured and stored for later use? So there is a website. I don't have it off the top of my head, but if you go to the university library website sort of explore from there, I think there's a link on our main page. If you know of material, articles that appeared or physical items that you had that you'd like to make part of this collection, follow up on it. I think it'll be interesting for research.
See, don't be so impatient, folks. Unless you're calling from the outside where you're standing in the heat to make the phone call, please stick with us. 979-0919. Maybe it's the same person who just, you know, had to go to the bathroom. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Talking about the current events, the follow-up to UVA's President Sullivan ouster and reinstatement.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with the phrase for that the library can use for their thing. Here we go. Hey, caller, how are you?
Hey, this is Michael Sears calling for Sean McCord. Is this the radio show?
It is, yes.
Hey. Is Sean there?
And he's pretending to be.
Is that Sean right there? I can't hear you. I'm on my cell phone.
Hang on. We're getting Sean set up. Sean was just kind of hanging around. He was the guy who didn't have any headphones on, and now we're setting
the
him up.
Blabbing away. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
There he is.
Don't mean to tie up your phone line. Just
turn the number
over. Enjoying the show this morning.
And Sean is enjoying the show, too. He loves it when these occasional things happen, and he can pop right in and fill in with on all the kerfuffle.
All right, listener, I'm he can hear you now.
Feather bedding of his career at the Harrison Small Collection, of course.
Okay, good
all
call.
Right. Thank you so much.
Just kidding.
Right. Did you have a question or a comment?
No, you were getting praised.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take it.
Sean doesn't get much praise here otherwise. All right, thanks, man. All right, 979-0919. You're welcome to call and praise Sean. You're welcome to call and harass Sean. I prefer not to be part of either. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, 1138.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Market for Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on newsstands Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find on this week's Hook.
And one local resident shares his story about medical bills and paperwork while being uninsured and how he became convinced the recently upheld Affordable Care Act is the right thing. The field of medicine may be changing rapidly, but the dean of UVA School of Nursing says nurses are moving to the forefront of healthcare. And The Hook continues with stories on the controversial attempt at removing UVA President Teresa Sullivan, including emails Dr. Helen Dragas sent during this time. The Hook, news in print every week, news online every day. All right, hang on just a second, caller, because I need to think. The folks at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. They're celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. As the heat of summer settles in, you can stay cool with Blue Ridge's selection of quick-dry shirts, boards, shorts, sandals, and flip-flops. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville and at two locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. And just to toss this out there, WNRNN Wake Up Call are looking for a second producer for the show. If you have interest in the program, are available to work occasional Sundays, and have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. You can email me at rmoore@wnrn.org or stop by the station and ask Moore. All right, we got a call. Caller, are you with me?
If you're talking to me, I am.
I am talking to you. I'm wagging my finger at you, too.
Well, can I comment on both the heat and the UVA? Something that the librarian had to say, the head librarian?
Yes, fire away.
Okay, Well, first of all, you know, as far as the storm and then the heat, I'm slowly moving into Buckingham County from Richmond. It's been a process for the last 3 or 4 years. I don't have electricity. I use a generator. So generally, I don't use the air conditioner. I've been spending a lot of time in the basin as a result of that. But I saw that storm coming. I don't use electricity because I can't get it to the property right now. And I saw that storm on one of these weather apps. And I first saw it way out in Cleveland. And when you see a storm out there, it's like, well, big deal. That's hundreds of miles away. And then three or four hours later, I said to my brother, man, this storm is coming a lot faster and closer than I've ever seen before. And I plan on sleeping out in the tent because it's so hot. I said, well, I'll just put a brick on the tent and, you know, it'll be all right. Oh, the kind of tent wound up in, you know, up in the top of the trees. And, it's just a nightmare. And that's a little travel trailer I live in, kind of waying back and forth. And we were thinking, well, we might have to make a run for the cellar that I stay in, well, that I have on the barn that I'm just dumping this building. But, you know, the heat has been so tremendous out here that I finally just threw it in the hat, and I've been back in Richmond, and just finally driving out today because I'm looking forward to 3 or 4 days of 80-degree weather. So I really feel for these people in Lynchburg and West Virginia. I have a place where I can go to get air conditioning and cool off, but staying out on this property, the heat is just so oppressive. I can't imagine not having any place for respite. And I really feel quite a bit for them.
And that's a chance for me to give a quick reminder. I believe that the Herman Key Center down near Intellis Wireless Pavilion and at Tonsler Park area are cooling centers here in Charlottesville. A caller, you also wanted to say something about the UVA Sullivan issue.
I did. That our head librarian there, I have a couple of brothers who graduated from the university and then some of the my nieces that went there as a result also. And the one thing that he mentioned that really made me kind of wary is he mentioned the fact that, you know, the people who work in the institution may be having a better insight as far as how to run a university as opposed to having people who are considered visitors. I'm of the opinion that, sure, some people may be good as far as day-to-day operations, but you should always have some kind of oversight. And not to say that he's not saying you shouldn't, but you need to have some outside body, as far as just about any institution is concerned, that comes in and takes a look. Because, you know, you get this myopia when you're working in these institutions of any sort, where, okay, we know what's best. Well, you know, maybe you don't. Someone needs to watch the watchers. And that's the one thing I'm really kind of concerned about. The conversation going on, I listen to the radio, and it seemed pretty abrupt. I don't know, well, nobody knows, I guess, actually, what it is that caused the kerfuffle, as we heard him say. But that's my one concern as you talk about it. Now, someone needs, and I can't hold against somebody if they've earned a lot of money in life. I would hope that with 80-some-odd people on that board of visitors, that there are people who get up every morning and go to work. I mean, whether they're making from Allen, making $1 million a year, or somebody like myself who's just a registered nurse and goes out and makes by, you know, 5 digits a year. Either way, somebody needs to go in there and watch and to see what is going on. And that's it. Thank you very much for giving me the time, guys.
All right. Thanks, man. And just a couple things to follow up quickly is, first of all, I believe that the number user was 80, and it's not 80. The Board of Visitors has 16.
That's
the Faculty Senate has 80-ish.
Yeah.
And I understand the point about concern about who's overseeing. You can be too inside. But I think that what many people are asking for is that the Board of Visitors not all be from outside. Is that they have a little more information shared with them, and that some people who are inside feel as though that their knowledge and concerns are brought into the decisions.
Well, I think the caller touched on some important points. And thank you for the opportunity to clarify some of what I said earlier. And by the way, I want to add that I am speaking for myself. not for my employer. But these are my own views. But Rick, you asked me to recount some of the conversations that I've heard going on at the university. And I think the issue is that, yes, there is a culture, there is an academic culture where academia is not a for-profit business. Academia is designed for education and research. There is a difference between that culture and the corporate culture. Corporate culture is profit for the stockholders and longevity of the company. They really are coming from two completely different directions. Teresa Sullivan herself, President Sullivan herself, in her press release in the middle of this, said, and I'm paraphrasing, but said, you know, you can't run a great university as a business. We have completely different concerns. And I should note as a side note, we're hearing President Barack Obama say many of the same things, that, you know, when you're in the White House and you're running a country, you're running a country. You're not running a business. So I think the Board of Visitors, sure, should be composed of people. You do want to have the advice of people who have been successful in other areas, who can come in and use some of that expertise, lend some of that expertise to the university. But when the Board of Visitors is composed primarily of people who have given lots of money to political campaigns, and that is their first qualification for getting appointed, then I think it does skew the conversation towards profitability. And that's what seemed to be the issue here. Somehow this small cadre of people in the Board of Visitors wanted to make the university more profitable. And that's a conversation that just doesn't really make sense when you're talking about education, when you're talking about research, when you're talking about doing things that the profit line isn't where it's coming from, but it's coming from something deeper and something older. And that's what keeps us going at the university, is being a part of that mission.
And something that I learned within the last year, and I think many people are unaware of or certainly overlook, is that the academic side of the university is a nonprofit organization.
That's right.
All the money that comes in is supposed to be spent on whether it's grants or faculty or, you know, mm-hmm. wherever, you know, copy machines.
Scholarships.
That's right. It is. So when you start talking about running it like a profitable business, what you're really doing is cutting money somewhere so that you can spend it somewhere else. It's not so that somebody else can go home with a little extra cash. Let's see. We got a call here. Hey, you're with us. Comment today on Wake Up Call. Caller?
Hello.
Yes, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're well. Comment on any of the topics yet today?
No. I'm sorry, I have the wrong number.
All right, man. Thanks, though. See, and that's what happens when guests are unavailable and producers show up to grab the other side of the mic to talk about current events. I'd love those. You know, in the past, we used to get almost once every other week, we'd get a call with somebody going, yeah, I'd like to request a song. And I'm like, why? You're not even listening to the station if you're requesting a song during the talk part of the hour. 11:49.
We could do a little Foggy Mountain breakdown
that's
here.
That's true, we could. That's always why I like listening to Rusty on the way in. Support today also coming from L. Oppelman's Central Virginia Complete Music Headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, as well as electric guitar packages and complete drum sets. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. Sean, we chatted briefly about the weather, and if this is the same person, hello, caller.
Hi.
Hey, what you got for me?
So I'd like to talk about the cleanliness of the water supply right now for Charlottesville, the chloramine. I mean, here we are sweating, and we need to go drink some water. Not everybody can go to the store and get a dollar's worth of water. This chloramine stuff that they want to put into our filtration system. I don't like the idea of it, and I've heard too many negative things about it. If you guys could maybe find a specialist to talk about that. But as far as storms, I'm from Florida. I lived down there for about 10 years, and for about 3 weeks, my pregnant wife, myself, lived without electricity, and we made it through. There's three parts of a storm. Anytime a storm's coming, there's, you know, set yourself up, get ready for it, prep for it, whatever the key word is, good for you. The second part of a storm is right in the middle of it. When it's hitting you, what do you do and how do you take care of yourself? What should you be doing? And the third part of any storm is afterwards, are you prepped for that? So any regular citizen that has wherewithal needs to look at all three stages of a storm, not just, oh my God, here's a storm, let's go get some more peanut butter. You know, it's like the other guy said about generators and... I don't know. What do you guys feel about what I just said?
Well, let me jump on that. First of all, there's two parts to my answer. First of all, is that multiple people, and I don't know if the governor said it or this just came from somewhere from the state, the government of Virginia, is that one of the biggest problems with this storm was that there was no time to prepare. When you have hurricane force winds and a storm that you didn't get any notice about, as you would with a hurricane, many people are caught off guard. Whether that's gas in the car, water in the house, and you know, you talk about how people can't afford to go get a dollar worth of water, and I can't remember what the proper chloramines
in our water supply here.
But then, how do you afford to buy a generator?
Exactly. But you know what? The first part of what I said was, you need to prep. You need to get things ready. You need to set some money aside. And even sharing, people would have to throw an extension cord from their generator over to your house. And maybe you're the guy that that grows vegetables in the backyard. Well, there you are walking over to his house saying, man, here's a bunch of tomatoes. Let's open up the barbecue. You got some extra propane? Yeah, I got that. So there's many ways to prep for a storm in your regular everyday grocery shopping.
Yes, there is. Whether that's bottled water or cans of things, you need to make sure that you have abilities to where you don't rely completely on electricity. I had trouble because I live off a well, so that was flushing the toilet twice, and you know, although now I'm breaking into my 5-gallon jugs of water. I'm standing at the sink showering with a wet washcloth, although I guess not everybody wants to know that.
And also, you know, as long as you're opening up this can of worms that we all live in the middle of, New Jersey right now supposedly is the second state in the country that has the largest amount of solar panels being used. So could you imagine having two or three solar panels on your house instead of a generator? And I'm just saying this for the person that wants to prep that has some extra money. So there you are. You don't have to go out and get gas for your generator. You kind of flip over from one current to another. You already have an outlet available in the house. You plug your generator, or I'm sorry, you plug your refrigerator or your window air conditioner. And so there's many ways to prepare, and there's many ways that there should be money back from the state to each person that wants to get ready. Go buy a generator? Well, here's $100 back. Solar panels? How come Virginia's not big on that? This is just some of the things I'd like to talk about.
All right, man. Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
11:54 on the wake-up call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And don't go anywhere, because at noon, Drew Thompson is here for Les Temps Purdue. Best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Drew brings you the roots of alternative, because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Purdue, only on WNRN. A few minutes left. Our guest today, unavailable to be here, Wayne Cozart, to talk about the secret societies of Virginia. We'll schedule that sometime in the near future. Sean McCord here, the outlaw, in-law, that wouldn't go home, helping me with current events. Sean, you're that caller talking about being prepared.
Oh, well, I mean, he touches on some important issues. You know, incidents like this point out to me what a complete anti-survivalist I am, and how I'm wholly dependent on the social grid that we all live on. I was very fortunate. Well, my family was very fortunate that we didn't really lose any power. We had a last Sunday, my son and I were scheduled to go to to a party taking place out in Stony Point. And that morning, I got emails from the person's sister, from the host's sister, that the party was canceled because they didn't have any power. So we rescheduled the party to have it in our own house. We had about a dozen teenagers running around. We had a good time, and I was happy to do it because we have electricity, because we have running water, because we had a gas grill outside. But, boy, if I had been one of those people, if we hadn't had power for this past week, the last time that happened with us, the storm we had 15, 17 years ago, I don't even remember which one it was now, my wife took our then very small kids and went off to her sister's house. And I stayed and babysat the house for a few days. And the first thing we did when the power came back on was to replace our electric water heater with a gas water heater, because I found the hardest thing for me to get by with was no hot running water. So, yeah, he's absolutely right. I should probably have a generator in my basement. I should probably have a room dedicated to canned foods and you know, manual can opener and be prepared for these sort of things. But honestly, I'm not. and I think a lot of people right now are in the same position, realizing that whether or not they've had electricity this past week, realizing that they too weren't prepared.
Yeah, you know, that we talked about the storm. By the way, we have a few minutes left, 11:57 on the wake-up call. If you want to give us your quick take on the storm and the weather, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. When that storm hit on Friday, I was planned to go out of town on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And so Friday night, and again, I live, you know, on electricity. I have a well powered by electricity. I have, you know, I don't have a room other than water. You know, I have a 5-gallon drinking jug, so I was able to do other things. But it was so hot. It was just so stinking hot come Saturday that a friend invited me to spend the night and leave from there on Sunday. So I packed my things in the dark with the flashlight app on my phone,
right,
and left from there. And fortunately, was gone because my power didn't come back on until Wednesday evening. And so other than spending one night in a hot, humid house, I didn't suffer too much until I came home and opened the fridge and had to throw all that stuff out, which was hot and stinky and humid too. But certainly a minor discomfort for what many people have had, and a few still have.
Absolutely. I have a friend of mine who's wrapping up a her Peace Corps tour. She's in Senegal, Africa. Ooh. Which is a shout out to you, April. And she's looking forward to coming back to Charlottesville, and she took great delight in pointing out that the weather and humidity that we were having here is exactly what she's been experiencing in Africa. For the past 2 years, she actually did a little screenshot of, you know, the weather forecast there and the weather forecast here, and they were identical. And they don't always have electricity. In fact, electricity is something of a luxury over there. So it's good to be reminded that people around the world actually live like this all the time. That we have become a little spoiled by our social grid. But on the other hand, I don't know if I'd want it any differently.
Yeah. Sean, thanks for helping me out today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Rick.
Thanks to the callers reminding us to be survivalists and centrists. And that one gentleman I didn't want to say while he was on the air, but if you were staying in a... what did he say he was in? He was in some sort of...
some kind of basement bomb shelter.
No. I thought he was in a little trailer on his property.
Oh, right.
During that storm. And I was in my log cabin, which is firmly secured to the ground. And I thought that thing was shaking. All right, folks. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps Perdue. Do your best. It'll cool down tomorrow. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, the wake-up call is also supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.